16 countries sang in semi-final one of Eurovision 2021, but only 10 could make it to the final. This result was determined by a 50-50 split between the juries across Europe and the televoters also across Europe. And Australia, y'all, I forgot to mention that. Australia is in this semi. Porig, there is a lot to break down. Should we talk about it?
Let's do this.
All right, just to kick this off, we're going to do the boring bit. We're going to read you the results. First, the overall results. This is so we are all on the same page. The winner of semifinal one was Malta, followed by Ukraine, Russia, Lithuania, Israel, Cyprus, Sweden, Azerbaijan, Belgium, and Norway. Those were the top 10 who made the final.
And the non-qualifiers were Croatia, Romania, Slovenia, Australia, North Macedonia, and poor Ireland in last.
So before we dig into the splits, let's just quickly talk about the overall results. I think Malta winning is not really a surprise. There was a lot of hype for a very long time. She delivered a fantastic vocal performance, and this closed the show. So we can say this was a deserved victory.
Indeed, and definitely if we put on our pre-contest hats, it makes a lot of sense that Malta are on top. They were very popular. Everybody was talking about them. They were getting all the hype. But the one thing then, looking at it from a post-contest perspective, it's odd that they fell so dramatically when it comes to the final, because usually when a song tops the semi-final, it does quite well in the final itself. And I think the last time I recall something so dramatic was perhaps when Alexander Rybak topped the semi-final back in 2018, and then he wasn't in contention at all when the final came around.
That's a great example. We can also point to Kate Miller-Heidke from Australia in 2019. I'm just looking here in the comment section on WeeWeeBlogs, and Tani points out Australia won their semifinal, performed 25th in the final, and then only placed 9th. So there is precedent to this. We'll talk about this more in our grand final video. But yeah, this does happen with some big semifinal winners. Now, Ukraine coming second, this made me so happy. I think this is a beautiful result. This really cut through. So many songs came before it because this was near the end, and it just popped out. Vocally, it was on point. Visually, it was amazing. I just love that Ukraine did well because there were a lot of fears. You know, when they released the revamp, a lot of people in the, you know, Euro fandom were like, oh no, it's so much worse than the original. But y'all, you gotta put that to the side. You gotta focus on what you have and what people will see for the first time, and this absolutely slayed.
Yeah, like, I feel like I owe an apology to Goe. When they first came out after winning Vidbear in 2020, I was like, oh, this won't work. It's very local. It's a very local sound. It's very unique to Ukraine. I don't think Europe will get it. And then by the end of the summer, Solovey was on loop in my head over and over again. And then Shum came out, and then I was like, oh, it's no Solovey, they're going to struggle with this. But then when you see the final package, the staging they put in place, the energy they brought to the performance, it all came together, and it just worked perfectly on the night, and they were able to capture the moment. And everything was just so well done with the whole performance, between their movements, the LED, and it literally like was in beat with the music. Like, there's the moment where they kind of like, there's a little click and they go down, and that really captured my imagination, and it clearly captured Europe's as well.
Unbelievable. I've rewatched this like 55 million times. I just think it is so epic. Russia coming third. This is fantastic. We'll talk about this in the split results, but I was worried that the split would be, you know, jury against public four, and in the end they were both four and the jury would put her even higher. I think the staging elevated this. The staging really took this to a new level. In the Russian contest, it was a bit messy. Here it was refined, it was polished, it had a clear narrative, and most importantly, it had an emotional climax with the 100 women behind her.
And they were able to use a gimmick very cleverly without it becoming a joke, because she kind of brought the quirky nature of Eurovision that some televoters expect when she came out in the big dress on wheels. And it kind of had the bit of silly that people like. And then she very cleverly was able to incorporate her message without losing any of the seriousness or the sincerity. And she was able to do that, and clearly it captured people's hearts. And I think the end message with the wall of selfies, that was very powerfully done, because we've seen it done so many times at this stage, and it's always come across kind of as cheesy and tacky, but she was able to make it work, and it was really a powerful moment.
All right, well, those were the gold, silver, and bronze medalists of semi-final one. Now, rather than going through all of these individually, let's go through the televote and jury vote, and then we'll call out to things we found interesting or unusual. So quickly to review, these are the televote results. Ukraine came out on top, followed by Malta, Lithuania, Russia, Israel, Azerbaijan, Cyprus, Norway, Croatia, and rounding out the top 10 in the televote, Sweden.
And if the public had their say, these countries would have not made the final. They were Belgium, Romania, North Macedonia, Slovenia, Ireland, and Australia.
And then looking at the jury vote, the winner was Malta, Russia was the runner-up, followed by Ukraine, Israel, Cyprus, Sweden, Belgium, Lithuania, Romania, and Croatia.
And the bottom six with the juries were Azerbaijan, Norway, Slovenia, Australia, Ireland, and North Macedonia.
Now, Porig, let's talk about some funky math, okay? A lot of people are, like, upset because Albina was a big fan favorite. It looked amazing. Televoters put her through in 9th. The jury put her through in 10th. But because of the way the system works, our girl finished 11th, just missing out behind Norway's ticks. What are your thoughts on Croatia's elimination?
Firstly, you feel sorry for Albina because she was so close yet so far. And it's just one of those things, the way the system works, that it's very hard to come up with a completely fair system. And when the maths comes into play, she lost out. And it would have been equally unfair if they'd said, well, she came 10th and 10th, and even though you got higher points, you have to stay in the semi-finals. So there had to be some way for it to go. And at the end of the day, it wasn't like she was in the top five with both and still lost out. She was borderline all along. And I think ultimately she was a victim of what a lot of other acts fell victim to later on in the grand final, was the saturation of pop bops, especially female-led bangers. And in that semi alone, you had Malta, you had Cyprus. You could arguably throw in Ireland, Australia, even Ukraine. They were all female-led
Israel.
Up-tempo songs. Oh, Israel as well. I forgot about them. And I guess that when you go and rank them up, Croatia was still among people's favorites, but they didn't feel as passionately about it as they did about El Diablo or Set Me Free. And that, I think, was her ultimate undoing.
I just really hope this doesn't push Croatia away from the contest, because this was so hyped. There was so much love for this, so much attention for this. She was a personality of the year. Perhaps, well, yeah, one of my favorite interviews, definitely. She's just a ball of light. Croatia showed they can do fantastic stage shows. This is their best staging since they've been back, no doubt. I mean, yeah, this was just sleek, slick. It looked amazing. They had a beautiful performer. Oh, I hope she feels amazing because she deserves to. Now look, as part of Albina coming 11th, a lot of people are pointing out that Norway ticks came 10th and Azerbaijan was 8th overall. Now the juries would have kicked out Azerbaijan and Norway. And there was, of course, this Tix-Findi romance. You know, Tix first revealed his love, or, you know, his little crush on a Findi in a Wee Wee Blogs interview.
This makes me move.
I'm like totally crushing on her.
And subsequently, this became a media narrative. You know, even the EBU got in on the action, I believe, on their YouTube page, uploading a video of, you know, their date. My sister, funny enough, when Tix and Effendi were on their first date, she was prancing out of the arena to get her COVID test, and she's like, "Oh my God, that tick's an Effendi," and their translator. And so she snapped a photo. This became a thing, and a lot of people say that's unfair that the official Eurovision YouTube kind of, you know, shared their love story. At the same time, their love story was already out there, y'all. They were promoting on their own channel, so I don't think we can necessarily blame the EBU. This was part of the media narrative. You know, this isn't just a song contest, it's a TV show, and there's a media circus that surrounds it. So if that played a role, it played a role. You know, you can't kind of divorce the stage show from these people's personalities and lives, because it's no, you're getting the whole package here, is what I'm trying to say. Do you have thoughts on this?
Well, the whole thing with the love story and the EBU, basically the EBU is always looking for content, and if a delegation gives them content, the EBU is going to upload it. So if other delegations are upset, they need to get their artists and start a little romance or get some media story to get it going. At the end of the day, I think that inside the little Eurovision bubble, people might have been really aware of this whole Tix Fendi thing, but I don't think the wider public who don't follow the Eurovision Instagram account, who don't follow Tix or Fendi, who are just tuning in on the Tuesday evening for the very first time, they wouldn't be aware of it. And except maybe there was someone said that the points from Azerbaijan were enough to get Tix over the line, so maybe locally in those two countries it was advantageous, but definitely it wasn't in news reports in Ireland. It wasn't highly promoted here, so I don't think people outside of the immediate Eurovision bubble and local bubble would have been aware of it. And that's kind of seen, the evidence of the quality of these two songs is seen in the charts, that both of them are doing quite well on Spotify. Fendi got into the global charts, Tix is charting in a lot of global and local charts too. So I think the romance, while nice in the little bubble, I don't think it had a huge impact apart from maybe the swapping of points.
That said, the swapping of points is significant. Now that I think about it, because 10 points from Azerbaijan went to Norway, I believe, in the televote. That's a pretty big margin, given that the overall result was just 5 points between Norway and Croatia. But hey, everybody's got to play the game. So well done to those who played. Now look, let's talk about something else. Lithuania, third in the televote, which is amazing, which is fantastic. We saw them replicate this success in the grand final, doing very well with the televote. But the juries in this semifinal only ranked them eighth. I find that really quite shocking, because this is one of the most radio-friendly hits. This is one of the most commercial-sounding songs, and yet it still has a soul, it still has a core. That really surprised me.
I was surprised too, because one thing when it comes to the Roop, people constantly underrate Vaidotas' vocals, that he was always giving a perfect performance vocally. There was never any issues. And he's not singing a basic kind of song. There's a lot of vocal acrobats and tricks and skills that he has to utilize in order to deliver discotheque. And at the same time, there's all this hand choreography, and that's difficult for me to do sitting on my couch, let alone while I'm singing a song in front of millions of people on the Eurovision stage. So I am shocked that the juries didn't appreciate that more, because when we look at it, they gave, like, it wasn't as if they weren't in the mood for something a bit more frivolous, because they've ranked Israel, Sweden, Cyprus all higher, and they're arguably much more kind of manufactured pop songs than Lithuania's The Roop. And yeah, it is surprising, but I'm very glad that the public saw something in it and they dragged it up.
Absolutely. The staging was also so nice, simple but effective. It was amazing. Now, Israel is one we need to talk about. We all thought this was kind of borderline coming into this, partly because the original version did not slay, but then, as Eden said in our interview, they amped it up. They really amped it up. This did much better than I anticipated for a few reasons. I think one is that her voice live really is powerful. When she hits those whistle notes, it sounded amazing. Israel chose a clever recap clip where she looks to the camera and says, yeah, hitting the high note and giving Ariana Grande, you know, attitude and energy. That recap clip was just so well chosen. I think among the smartest of any from any delegation. And also the dress reveal was quite memorable. It was a moment. That was definitely a moment. And I think those three things really gave this something you could hook on to, something you could remember. The juries put it fourth And the public put it fifth, so this was not borderline in the end at all. What do you think?
I was one of the people who felt that potentially Israel could be borderline, not necessarily because of the song, but because of what's happening in the wider world and the politics. Because right now, there's a lot of bad news and bad PR coming out of Israel, and their government is doing a lot of stuff that is seen as very negative. And in countries like Ireland, there's heavy coverage of it, and there's a strong sentiment in a lot of these countries that the people sympathize with Palestine rather than Israel. And I thought that that might impact then on the vocal, not the vocals, on the votes that Israel might get, especially from the televote. But even in Ireland, where the coverage is, I wouldn't say anti-Israel, but maybe more pro-Palestine, they still got televote points, which is an indicator to people who say, oh, Britain won't get votes because of Brexit, that politics really doesn't come into it when people are picking up their phone. People pick hear a song and they tend to vote for what they like. And because in the grand scheme of things, Brexit is not a big deal when you look at what other countries are doing. And there's other countries, not just Israel, that have questionable politics going on. So it is a evidence, if people ever needed it, that Eurovision is, while there always will be politics in it, but Eurovision is above politics to a certain extent. And if you have a good song, you can cut through that.
People tune into the song, a good song. Edin is a beautiful performer. Her energy, her effervescence, she's just so bubbly, right? You forgot almost for a split second that you were in a competition. It felt like she was given the Ariana Grande concert. It was so lovely. I'm just really proud of her because she is a light. She's one of the nicest women we met, or people we met in Rotterdam. She's just giving life. All right. What else was surprising? So the televoters, I guess this isn't surprising, the televoters would have kicked Belgium out and the jury would have put Belgium in. And I think this makes a lot of sense. Like, this is not the most instantaneously gripping song, but I think once you're into it, you're really into it. I think juries very much respect the quality, the production, the artistry, Heike's intensity. It really draws you in. This became one of my favorites over the course, after the rehearsal, because there's just this magical X factor quality. You can't say necessarily why it's so impactful, but it is. They just have a chemistry, they have an aura, and you know, it's the X factor. We talk about the X factor and they have it. They're seasoned as well. They're not young and perspiring ambition and trying to climb to the top. They're already at the top. You know, Sinan Sadula, our Bulgarian blogger, was saying they perform sold out concerts in Bulgaria already. You know, they're everywhere, and juries really responded to the power of Hoovervonik.
Yeah, with the breakdown, I'm not surprised that The Wrong Place as a song was kicked out by the public, but I am a little surprised that the public didn't back Hoovervonik more because, like you said, they're doing sold out tours in Bulgaria. They're obviously big in Belgium, Netherlands, all these other countries in that general European continental Europe. So I was surprised that they didn't have the fan base, the existing fan base, to push them over the line, because a lot of people were suspecting that that might be what pushed them ahead of Albina. But in the end, it was the juries rather than the televote. So, nonetheless, I can see why the juries respected it. It is a very high quality song. And while it's simple, it does capture you in the moment. And it did bring a new flavor to the contest. And it definitely stood out in this semifinal, which was so heavy on the up tempo to mid tempo songs, that this stood out and it had an air of quality about it. So it was nice to see it make the final, although I know some people were upset because they felt that Belgium took the spot of their favorites, because there was a couple in the bottom six that people, fan favorites, that got in that Belgium snuck in ahead of.
Now, earlier we mentioned that Lithuania had this big, you know, difference between the jury and the televote. It was, you know, 5 places different. So they were third in the televote and then eighth with the jury. But we should point out that was matched by Azerbaijan. Efendi was sixth in the televote, but the jury put her 5 places lower in 11th, so out of the grand final. I can understand why this happened. I think that the Azerbaijani song was instantly gripping, like you stuck what you were doing. It was charting globally on Spotify, viral charts. Like it has this instantaneousness that televoters really seek, which we didn't necessarily have in Belgium. Whereas jurors are probably looking at the structure of the song, the overall package, the feel. And to them, this was less of a commercial pop song, even if it's laying on Spotify, and more of kind of a Eurovision curiosity. Because this is a very Eurovision song, right? You're not going to hear songs like this necessarily on the top 40 of the UK charts. I don't know about Ireland. But, you know, Snake Charmer, like she had a snake in the background, right? This was like a Snake Charmer realness. Sounds of the Near East. Very theatrical. I'm glad they took these risks, and it clearly paid off with the televoters. I thought this was so much fun. I love the ending. Let's go. But I think juries, you know, the juries do play it safe. They do play it safe because people judge you when they see your name next to a song, and they have to think about their reputations in the real world. I think it's unfortunate. I think you should vote with your heart. But, you know, that's what they do. And coming 11th with the jury is not bad by any means. I mean, that it, clearly it was enough to put her through. What are your thoughts on this split?
Yeah, I can see why the televotes went for it, because it is, as Salvador Sobral might call it, fast food music with lots of fireworks. And I can see then why equally the juries didn't go for it, because there's not much story to it. It's kind of like a collection of words, and that she says Mata Hari a lot without really giving us any insight into who Mata Hari was. If you didn't know that Mata Hari was a spy during one of the world wars, you didn't leave the performance any the wiser afterwards. And like you said, it's a song that could only exist in the Eurovision bubble. Like, I think even in Eastern Europe, where they have more of a fondness for these ethnic sounding bops in their regular chart music, I still think I couldn't imagine Mata Hari popping up in a chart anywhere else. Like, the only time I've ever heard a song similar to it was Cleopatra last year. And that could be another reason why juries didn't warm to Mata Hari, because most of Europe who don't follow Europe closely won't have heard of Cleopatra. Whereas a lot of the juries, potentially, they ask the same names year in, year out. Obviously, they don't repeat them year in, but like, you recognize a lot of names when you look at the list. This person might have been on the jury in 2017. This person might have represented the country in 2016. So they're in the bubble. So they're probably aware that this sounds very like Cleopatra, and they could have marked it down based on that too, because when you listen to both of them back to back, as I did on the day of the final, you it's seamless to transition from Cleopatra into Mata Hari, no matter what order. So it's basically like 6 minutes of the same song. So the juries might have been aware of that too.
Magnificent, okay? I thought this was so much fun. Sinan Sadula, Weeby blogger, who was on the ground, just go to his Instagram. He'll explain the love in about 55 stories, and they're all worth it. They are all worth watching. Love him. All right, we're going to continue going through this list, and we turn to Cyprus, actually. I thought this would have done better. It came fifth with the jury. It came seventh with the televote. This is a strong result. This is still a very strong result. I believe this upped the ante from Tamta. This did better than Tamta did. This package was just, it was so slick, you know? It felt like something at the MTV Video Music Awards, but even better. She sounded great. She looked great. The song is radio friendly. Yes, people make the Gaga comparisons, but Elena Sagrino is not Lady Gaga. She is Elena Sagrino. And you felt that fire. You felt that fuego, that passion. I was so happy for her. I was so happy for Laurel Barker in the background, you know, doing those vocals, like slaying it. So yeah, sixth overall, I think, is a brilliant result. And there's actually parity here. You know, fifth from jury, seventh from televote. That's consistently good. So they can be proud of a strong package.
Yeah, and I can see why they came where they did with the jury. Fifth is very respectable. And the jury obviously saw a radio-friendly, chart-friendly song. I am somewhat surprised that they were all the way down in seventh with the public, because I thought that this is kind of something that people would really warm to. And when you looked at Azerbaijan and Israel, the two songs immediately before it, I thought that Cyprus would be the one that would be slightly more mainstream, that would catch people's attention. And it was definitely the one with the most eye-catching staging. Because the staging for me beforehand, I was kind of doubtful of El Diablo. I was kind of like, oh, it's generic, it's this, it's that. And the staging won me over, and it won over a lot of other people who were watching rehearsals. Yeah. And at one point it was nearly kind of a question, like, would they be in the top three of the semi-final, which obviously they weren't. But I don't know what it was that turned the public away in the semi-final. It could be just a case that they felt they'd heard it before 10 years earlier on Bad Romance. I don't know. But it's still a very good result for Cyprus. And yeah, she did very well. And it's just a shame then that she kind of lost a bit of momentum in the final, but that's obviously another video.
Let's talk about Sweden. So this is interesting. 10th with the televote. That for Sweden, that's not a good result. The juries did give this love. The juries put this in sixth. I think we spoke about this earlier that, you know, Tusa at home had such a beautiful story. People knew this moving, impactful story, and that makes the song more impactful. And I think maybe at Eurovision, across the European audience, that story didn't transmit as loudly. I think I'm obsessed with him. You know, our interview, he's such a lovely person, honestly, full of life, full of energy. And if you understand the song and how he really believes in it and the sincerity once you know a little bit about his life. And it's just amazing. I'm so glad he made the final in Slade. And he's got this infectious, bubbly personality. But I guess Europeans, if they didn't have the backstory necessarily, the power of the song is perhaps diminished a little. But you know, Sweden, again, they still sailed through to the final. In what position? Seventh. And while that may not reach Sweden's epically high standard in terms of results, you know, most countries, a lot of countries would kill for that seventh place. What are your thoughts on the Sweden split?
I think that Sweden was such a slick, well-produced quality song that it was nearly too slick and polished, and it kind of would slip right out of people's memories, and it nearly blends in with the surroundings that it doesn't stand out as well as some of the exceptionally good songs or the not so good songs, and it kind of gets lost in the middle in a bit of a sea of beige, so to speak. And the public aren't like the juries. Like, the juries are there to reward different things like vocals and lyrical content, whatever criteria they have. They have their set of criteria when they're ranking the songs, and they have to rank their songs from top to bottom. And so they're probably going to rank Sweden quite high because they can't dock a whole load of marks from it for these different things because it was done well. Whereas the public are only going to pick up their phone for their favorites. And Sweden wasn't really the song that I don't think many people would have as their favorites. It wasn't instantly gripping or instantly catching. And then if you're not familiar with Tusa and you're not familiar with his story, there's little motivation to pick up the phone. And the public will only vote for two or three. They're not going to rank all their songs and put Tusa somewhere in the middle and therefore give him points like the juries. So I can totally see why Sweden didn't do so well. And Sweden didn't have any kind of gimmick like they do normally, because if you think about it, they had the stick man with Måns, they had the treadmills with Robin Bengtsson, they had the lights with Benjamin and Gross. So there was nothing to Tix, it was just him walking down. So there wasn't even that for people to latch onto. So I can totally see why he came in 10th.
More shots of the nail polish. That's what I say. His nail game is on point. Now, let's turn to Romania. This was a journey for real. This was a journey because in the first rehearsal, she was crying. She was so emotionally like overwhelmed by the situation. You know, after 2 years hitting that stage, I think a lot of us really felt for her. In that first run through of the first rehearsal, it wasn't good. It was really upsetting to watch. And then by the second and third take, you know, she was pulling herself together. In the jury show, then she has this technical meltdown, not her fault at all, but they messed up her earpiece, everything was out of sync, and we were just in the press room. Like, people were so upset for her because she was growing in confidence, and that's got to knock you for six when this is your big moment, and it's like you're being punched in the gut. And I felt so bad for her. She got to redo it though. And when she redid it after a very understandable and very deserved protest from the Romanian delegation, they did what they should do. Then she did very well in that second run through. And I think with the jury, I do think that would have helped her a little bit. Because we were all like, you know, standing up, clapping. It's like, you did it. You got up, you dusted yourself off, and you nailed it. So I do wonder if that helped give her a boost with the jury. The jury put her ninth, having seen this unfold in real time. It was a dramatic moment. Because after this very steady show, the problem started with the final three, I believe. It was Romania, Ukraine, Malta. They were all having in-ear issues, and she was the first one to have to deal with it, and hers was by far the worst. The televoters, so on the next night when they saw, I just think maybe compared to other acts, there wasn't much going on stage. And sometimes that can work in your favor, a la Salvador Sobral, a la Duncan Lawrence. But in this instance, I don't know. The staging just felt empty. I think using the run, walking on the runway, there was motion, right? So you were seeing the people, the crowd. Whereas in the Salvador Sobral performance, in the Duncan Lawrence performance, the audience was totally cut off and they were just standing in place. So it's kind of like if you're gonna do intimate and ditch the audience, maybe just stand still. Because when you're moving around, it makes you aware that she's walking around a big room and nothing's happening. But I do think she pulled it together. I think she's lovely. I think she's wonderful. I think her voice is amazing and unique. And surely the jury would have rewarded that as well. The public, 12th, that's not an endorsement. But you know, this performance is not going to define her. Watch her Wee Wee Jam performance of her sitting on a big chair. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. That could have been the staging, honestly. It was so good. Borg, what do you think?
That was exactly going to be my point, actually, because I feel that this was vexed by staging, both that the staging was kind of too out there, that they were trying to tell some kind of narrative. I think that the dancers were supposed to be her inner demons, the mental health demons, and that she was breaking free of them, and that there was moments where they're smothering her and all this kind of stuff, and there was all the movement. But firstly, the staging was too complex for people to get the message, I think, and secondly, it put a lot of pressure on Roxanne to perform, because not only was she singing a song that is quite vocally challenging, because there's a lot of it's not a very static song, that there's a lot of ups and downs in what she has to do. And she was running around trying to get her mark, doing all this with her arms, and it took away because it left her breathless. If you watch the Wee Wee Jam performance, she can
Oh.
do it perfectly well when she's standing, sitting down on a stool. I'm sure she could have done it equally well standing still. And if you look at it, that the simple staging actually did well in the semi-final, because Hooverphonic got through with their simple staging. And Roxanne just, it was overcomplicated. And then they had, I think they must have had a bit of a crisis about the costume as well, because in the early run-through, she was wearing a kind of more casual look with a big hoodie and a kind of a furry hood. And then by the end of it, she had changed to this completely different dress, which didn't really fit with the mood of the song either. So I think it was, we had the right song, we had the right singer, but as with one or two other acts, it was the staging that killed it.
So let's now go to the bottom four in this semi-final. Slovenia finished 13th overall, Australia finished 14th, North Macedonia 15th, Ireland last. So I guess one thing that stands out to me is Australia. This is their worst result ever. Last in the televote with 2 points, and 14th out of 16 with the jury. I was really surprised by this. I thought the staging looked really good. We were all kind of, maybe it's because we knew she was performing remotely and what they delivered looked like it could be in Rotterdam. I was so impressed with how this looked. I felt like she was on the Rotterdam stage. I felt like she had delivered something unique with this lighting, you know, this costume, the Cersei Lannister, sinister divine realness, the dancers. I really liked this. But I guess ultimately Europe is not ready for hyperpop. I think the staging was great, so maybe it's just the song. Like, it was very divisive, and we knew that. A lot of people said it was a loud mess, but other people said, you know, bravo for being experimental and trying something new. I was in the latter camp. Very clearly, based on this televote and this jury vote, hyperpop, at least this form of it, did not go down well.
I think one thing with us as press is we were familiar before going into the contest of that live performance that she did at Pride from the cricket grounds. And that wasn't an ideal first introduction to the world of the song. It wasn't a great arena for her to show off her vocals, and it wasn't a perfect performance, let's put it that way. So then when we saw the live on tape and she nailed the vocals and she gave us a very impressive stage show, we were impressed. So I think maybe we might have overlooked some of the other aspects of the song, and it jumped up in her estimation when really we maybe should have considered that the entry level and not judged it in compared to the original performance that she did. But I think there's a couple of things that there might be questions about the treatment of Australia, maybe looking in the months ahead, how they treated Australia's live on tape versus Iceland's live on tape. And I don't know whether it's good or bad, because Australia, when the performance ended, it was very obvious that everybody was watching it on a screen because it zoomed out and we saw that, oh, Montaigne's not actually there. We thought she was there, but she's not. Look, she's on a big screen, and it's just the audience watching her on a big screen. Whereas with Daddy and the Gagnamund, it was seamless. It didn't come out and show the big screen. They let the illusion lie that, oh, they're still performing on the stage, even though it was their second rehearsal from a week earlier. So I don't know if that played on people's mind, that people maybe were saying, oh, well, she's not singing live. Maybe she's doing those vocals with backing track or miming or something. And maybe subconsciously that could have had a negative impact in the public's mind, and they mightn't have rewarded her because of that.
I just want to say shout out to Montaigne. We love you. I'm so glad we discovered her music through Eurovision. She's killer. She's absolutely killer. This result does not define her. If anything, this result, whatever. She just needs to remember this gave her a lot of European attention, and her fans are gonna stay with her. Like, I hope this result doesn't bring her down because she is a Technicolor fantasy. Okay. But it is weird, not weird. It is sad to me that Australia has had to suffer this. They couldn't make it to the show because of this awful pandemic, and then to have this result on top of it. It's not a nice feeling, but I suspect they will come back even stronger with hunger and desire to prove they will slay again. Now, Porig, we have to talk about North Macedonia. So I was thinking this whole time it would come last in the televote, but then the jury would give it a bump. It was actually the opposite. The jury put it last, and the televote gave it a bump. Perhaps the televoters responded to what was a beautiful light show. It really was a beautiful light show. Yeah, I think maybe you don't agree with me. I know a lot of us Eurovision fans know Daughter. Tina, his stage director, told me flat out in an interview you can watch on Weebly Blogs that it was inspired by Daughter. No shame there, because her whole perspective was, well, people in Sweden saw it, but people who vote on the night, they didn't watch Melody Festival and Final. She's not talking about the Eurofans, she's talking about the broad audience, so why not? I really loved that light effect. I thought it was a moment, it was something to remember. I thought he sounded great. I just think ultimately the song was not strong enough to put this in contention at any point, but I am glad to see that televoters, there was a response there. He beat Slovenia, Ireland, and Australia, and that's not a result I would have predicted before we got to Rotterdam.
And I think it's a bit, how would we say it? I'm not sure the right word. We can't really say that the televoters gave him a bump, because they gave him 11 points and the juries gave him 12 points. It's just he was higher in the televote rankings. The televoters just happened to dislike other songs more, but they didn't really like him a whole lot more than they liked him less than the juries, in fact. So,
You are a glass half empty kind of person, but I'm gonna drink my half full coffee. Go ahead.
I can see why he didn't really resonate with people, because going into the contest, he was possibly. I had a few songs down near the bottom, and he was one of them. He was in contention for my last place. I think maybe it could be a case that obviously the song wasn't strong enough, and it was designed more, I think, to show off his talents rather than to deliver a really impactful song that people might resonate with. And I felt it was kind of like a bit of an insular performance, that it didn't really have the universality. The message that other songs did that people could connect to was very much Vasile's story, and Vasile this and Vasile that, like, me, 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 here I stand,
Oh,
I'm here, me,
interesting.
look at me, I'm shining. And I think that maybe televoters mightn't respond to that kind of message. That it was also like a very different song, but in semi-final two, Rafal had a very me, me, me song, I'm so great, and televoters didn't connect with that either. So I think the message might have damaged him. And then it was the song itself was an old-fashioned kind of song. It sounded nearly like it was from an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical from the 1980s. And Andrew Lloyd Webber might have come fifth for the UK back in 2009, but we're in 2021 now, and times have changed.
If I had a shade button, I'd be pushing it right now. All right, we move on, and this is gonna get personal. Ireland, 16th place overall. That is last. The televoters put Ireland next to last in 15th. The jury put this next to last in 15th. Let me just start by saying, I think that the translation from audio to stage, from studio to stage, can be very difficult, and this is a prime example. This was my number three studio cut of the year. This is the most, I think it may be the most played Eurovision song of the year on my Spotify. I'm obsessed with Leslie, I'm obsessed with this song. But if we step back and look at the staging, and just put aside personal love and personal obsession, it didn't translate well. I think that the paper cutouts, it was all quite dark. And so, and you know, Leslie's vibrant. To me, I mean, a story of my life, that video was vibrant. I think of color, I think of pow. And this almost, not black and white, but it kind of blanched everything out, all the color, the intensity that we love about her. And yes, at the end, they did break the third wall and we saw the orange, and it almost looked like the Irish flag, her green dress, the orange background. That was lovely. But that journey in the box, I think it's a great idea. I just think the execution didn't quite work. She had to remember to do quite a lot of stuff, so it never felt seamless. It never felt like fluid. It got better and better, absolutely, but it just never felt fluid. And I think when you have so much going on, there's nothing to attach to in a way. And what I would have loved to see is I would have loved just to attach to her. I think they could have had something very simple. She could have done this sitting on a stool, honestly, because she's that good of a performer. But I think it maybe just got too busy and was too ambitious. Because if you're gonna do that ambition, you better start practicing in 2019. Do you know what I'm saying? Because that's a lot to remember. And it just felt a bit hurried in a way. And yeah, she's an icon. I'm obsessed with this woman. Love her. I just think the staging didn't come together. She had a brilliant song, and I think this could have done much better. But please, Irishman, tell me, what are you feeling? Download.
Like on paper, it was a great package. The staging, Ireland was bringing something a little risky, a little out there. We hadn't quite seen it before because so many times Ireland staging has been, let's say, lazy, to put a nice word on it. And people have said, oh, the reason why we didn't get through was because of staging. So in theory, Ireland had a good package. They got Mons Zemrlo's stage, creative stage guy from 2015. They were putting this package together. She was practicing for weeks in Stockholm to get everything right. And then it kind of fell apart when you watch rehearsals. See, when you watch rehearsals, people are always complaining, saying, oh, the press are overhyping this or they're underhyping that or whatever. And you're kind of like basing your first reaction not on as an outsider, as an insider who's familiar with the song all along and who's familiar with Leslie as a personality. So you kind of want the best for her because Leslie definitely is probably the Miss Congeniality of Eurovision 2021. So then you have these emotions when you're seeing her staging for the first time, and you're like, oh, well, she's really ambitious and it does have the potential to be wow. And then you might get a little bit overexcited. And then when you look back after semi-final one and the day after, and you realize, okay, no, it wasn't so good. And I think one of the big problems was, one, the lack of color, because we've seen this before. They did it in a French national final with paper, but he had color and there was characters and people, and that added a little bit more life to it. But I think the biggest problem was just Leslie had to do so much, and she was running here and there, and she was popping her head down and up, and to do that and to keep a perfect vocal is tricky to do at the best of time, let alone on the Eurovision stage. And I think ultimately that's what did her in. And then there was a few random bits, like I really didn't get the idea where she sticks her hand in at the start and she pulls out a crumpled bit of paper and she brings it, and then at the end she throws it into the crowd. I thought that was adding a little layer of confusion to it as well. And they could have had the staging, but stripped it back a little bit, maybe brightened it up a little bit, just had Leslie do less. And it's a trap that people have fallen into before because it really reminded me of the situation of Greta Salome in 2016, that she had a similar ambitious staging, but instead of paper, she had shadows, and she too had a lot to do and a lot of movement, and she too had staging that people afterwards were saying was a bit dark when the song was supposed to be kind of bright. So yeah, it's sad because a lot of people thought that it was a very strong song, but like with Roxanne, it was death by staging.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that piece of paper was meant to be a map. And then in our interview, she told me it was meant to be a map, and then it made sense. But I think, I don't know, there were just little things like that which weren't clear instantly to the viewer. I still think that this is going to sound strange, but it showed their ambition. You know, they were trying to do something really next level. And so I think in that sense, maybe it's a good thing. Like, and you learn from your mistakes, but you know, there was effort here. There was so much effort, and the sincerity and the authenticity and the realness of Leslie. Like, Yeah, I'm just really. This was the one act where our team in Rotterdam, there were actually tears shed after the show. And I know that sounds over the top, but we were all so upset because she's like the sweetheart of Eurovision. We were so gutted. I'm not going to even talk about this. I'm going to get upset. All right. Have we
But one
talked?
thing, like you said, sorry, but one thing you said about the effort, like it's better to fail trying and knowing that you've done your best, and people will remember maps. Whereas when 22 came last in the semi-final back in 2019, I don't think many sheds were tears were shed, that it didn't have the same love for it because it was a simple, unambitious song. The staging was very plain and ordinary, and at least Ireland, while they may have come last, they have given a performance that will last in people's memories, and in years to come, people will still recall it and hark back to it. And she has all these fans now, so she hasn't lost. She just didn't make it to the final.
Absolutely. And just a few other quick points. A lot of people thought maybe the jury would push Slovenia through. The jury ultimately ranked this 13th out of 16. I think maybe it was a lack of originality. A big voice, which she has, will only get you so many points. I think they just need to be a bit more daring. I mean, Valene made the final, and that was out there. That was crazy. I'm not saying they have to go crazy every year, but I think the originality is really important for Slovenia because there are songs that make it through, like Tinkara Kovacs, that also felt original, even if it was a more kind of serious performance in a way. Like, that was very serious music, but they need to play to their USP. Like, what can you draw from your local culture? And I think both Valene and Tinkara Kovacs, they had something
And
special.
Sebi.
Yeah, Sebi as well, absolutely. This unique quality.
Yeah, when you look at Slovenia, they don't have the neighbors that, even though they're in the former Yugoslav region, they don't have the same love with their neighbors as the rest of the bloc does. And so they have to kind of push out there to get into the final. When they send something that's kind of ordinary, like Anna this year, like Omer Nabar in 2017, like Manuela in 2017,
Love
they
her.
don't get through. They have to go outside the box, and they have a reputation that when they do go outside the box, they do it very well, and they get to the final and they're very memorable. So yeah, that I think is their big problem, that they just have to, they don't have the neighbor votes to guarantee them 10th place in the semi-final. They need to elevate, and that's what was missing there.
And we talked about Norway in the context of Efendi and Azerbaijan, but I'm curious, what did you think of Norway? Were you happy it made the final? It was 10th, so this is very much borderline, just 5 points ahead of Croatia. The public put this 8th, the juries put this 12th.
I was actually surprised, not by the jury score, but by the televote score, that I had nearly resigned myself that this was going to be a repeat of Mikkel Spak from 2016. That you have a male performer with a song that's very 1990s, very dated, but people might connect with it, and that the televoters will really like go to it in their droves. Obviously, they went to it to a certain amount, but it wasn't anything spectacular. So I was actually ready for them to be on like a tidal wave of Backstreet Boys emotion and giving all their love to Tix, and that obviously didn't happen.
I love that in the televote, Cyprus was 7th and Norway was 8th. So the devil beat the angel in this instance. They were also next to each other in the running order. Crazy! Tix is a personality of the year. I love him. Absolutely love him. He's amazing. Any interview with him, he's so real. He's so authentic. There's none of this PR pretense. It's just like, I'm here. And you know what? I love Eurovision as a media event, and he is in this media event. In any case, that's what we think. What do you think? Are you happy with the semi-final one results? What jury televote split stood out to you? Let us know here on WeWee Blogs.
Make sure to subscribe, hit the like button, and check out some of our videos that aren't Maneskin, I Want to Be Your Slave.
We will also be filming these for semi-final 2 and for the grand final, so be sure to check back soon, and we will see you later.
Bye.
Bye.